Welcome to episode 45 of Forest Focus, brought to you by the USDA Forest Service Pacific Southwest Region. In this episode, we learn how to carve a trail as a snow groomer. Wait, scratch that. We try to learn. Behold Mount Shasta. Trust me, it's there. We are in this winter wonderland to meet this guy.
Jeremiah Tabor, and I am a recreation technician.
We met Jeremiah at the Pilgrim Creek Snowmobile Park, 7 miles of nicely graded road by the state, off Highway 89, on Shasta Trinity National Forest's McLeod Ranger District. This is Paul Wade with the Forest Focus staff. It's March. I'm here on a weekday for a ride along in this beauty, a Piston Bully 400 snow groomer, and to learn more about what Jeremiah does as a recreation technician. At around 4,000 feet, we unleash the beast into the wild, which looks like Bob Ross painted the trees and added a beautiful dusting of powdered sugar all over the canvas. How far away do people come?
Well, we get people from Redding all the way up here and Fall River, maybe a little further, but it depends.
It's, I think, where people come from, like Tule Lake and like Oregon, or like out there, is it like Canby area, which is like north of Fall River. But most Fall River, Redding, people come up to this area. But there is a snowmobile park called Ashpan that's on the 44, which is only about an hour. So it's a shorter drive for, I think, people to, from Red Bluff or Redding to go to. But this time of year, or just this year in general, they have really thin snow. So a lot of people have been coming up here and using this park more. So I think that's why I've seen probably more. Just, you know, some years are different.
It says snowmobile park, but who is actually using this area?
It's mostly snowmobiles, but we do get some cross-country skiers. It's a nice groomed little trail, and it's pretty flat, you know, coming out of here, out of the park. You can, you know, ski pretty far, quite a few miles without hitting any, you know, rugged terrain. But yeah, the snowmobilers like to come out here, and it's a good place to launch, and we got a warming hut right there, so they got a wood fire stove in there, and they can hang out and, you know, all day. And some people only have like one or two sleds and a big family, so they take turns on them and they hang out at the park and make it a whole like picnic day or whatever. But yeah, for the most part, you get, you know, some serious snowmobilers in here, and they got some nice machines that are made for climbing hills and playing in the powder. And what our groom system does is it gets them out there faster and more efficiently, so they can save fuel. And also too, if they run into a problem, they like seeing those groomed trails so they can get back on and back to safety quicker.
And who owns this land, and where do these trails lead?
Yeah, so we're on National Forest land. It's pretty checkerboarded around here with private, timber companies. There's like three or four of them out here. But so our trail system goes in and out of private and Forest Service. But the whole deal is that the state funds this program. They you know, paid for the shed, they bought the equipment, they paid for our time, but Forest Service personnel is the one who kind of operates the whole thing, and then we're on Forest Service roads is what we're grooming. Well, this road will take you it'll take you out to Medicine Lake is where most people go from it, but I mean, you can keep on it and end up either on Highway 97 out there by Tennant, and that's just I think south of McDowell, and then if you go another direction out by more like Medicine Lake, you can end up out there in the lava beds and even further out there. I forget the highway, but it's like Tule Lake area.
That would be Highway 139 in Perez, and don't even think about accessing the area from that side.
Yeah, but I don't know how far you can get this time of year. They don't plow the road, so like right here is where we stop plowing unless they're doing logging operations. And they'll plow it out to wherever they're logging, but we don't. We plow to the park, and that's it. And then just when it melts out, it is the time of year it's open again. So yeah, you can look on your Google Maps or whatever, and it'll say, you know, this road's nice and paved and get you all the way to here. But that's only if there's no snow.
And with my orientation figured out, we were off into the wild white yonder. On board, we have our safety gear, a chainsaw if we encounter fallen trees, food and drink, and a hopeful outlook on the weather as snow continues to fall.
But yeah, you can already see it's kind of clearing up a little. Or it's trying to. I think they only forecasted 1 to 2 inches today, and then it's going to clear up tonight.
We start plowing immediately past the parking lot on Road 13, heading northeast, with the paved Stevens Pass Road 3 to 5 feet under snow, or at least hip deep. Don't ask.
So right now we're just doing what's called track packing. We're just gonna drive over the fresh snow and...
Track packing, got it, not plowing. Already I'm learning new lingo, and this machine isn't Uncle Earl's snow removal business.
Kind of condense it a little bit more so it's easier to groom when you come back, and it gives you a better consistent trail for processing the snow. And then we're also coming back this way too, is why I'm track packing. So I'm saving fuel by not running my tiller back there right now. And so I'll just drive over this, track pack it, move the snow I need, cut out the drifts, and then I'll, when I come back, I'll drop that tiller and groom the snow.
Condense, groom, consistent trail, processing the snow, tiller, cut out drifts. We get into these terms a little later, but for now, I look around to check for any red buttons or switches, possibly something saying eject on it, as I suddenly realize how out of my element I am. Jeremiah calms my nerves and explains more about the machine we are comfortably cruising in.
I wouldn't waste video on this. This is like I said, this is gonna be boring for like an hour and a half. So Casbor is the name of the company that makes these out of Germany, and that's why you'll see in the front there's an emblem that says it's a K, but it's a, on the side it says Piston Bully 400, that's the model. So it's kind of like a Ford F-150 is the Piston Bully 400. I think it's kind of the standard for this kind of job, like most ski parks have these. There's different manufacturers of this kind of machine, this, you know, a groomer, but... they just state, being a government entity, got a contract and they bought a bunch of these, and this is kind of the mid-size model. They make a one just bigger, it's a 600, and that's a little too big for what we need. In fact, this one was a little big for what we needed. It comes, I think they're about 16 feet wide, and they had the tiller and the blade on this cut down to 14 and a half feet so we can get it on some of our narrower road systems.
I ask about the front business end, the plow or blade, since that is what we're staring at for hours. When Jeremiah showcases its capabilities, it looks like a piece of a transformer. Okay, I'm going to reveal my geek side. Like Rampage from the Decepticons, mixed with that P-5000 powered work loader Ripley used in the movie Aliens. Okay, back to reality.
Oh, okay, so this is a 12-way blade, yeah. Okay. So you've got the, some people call them ears or wings, but yeah, there's one function. This is, you know, well, technically that was four. And there's two more, up, down. You've got curl, and then you've got tilt, and then you've got side to side. And they all are necessary in this machine. I mean, some people, you know, especially beginners, when you're teaching them how to move snow and stuff, they just do this. And then, you know, like this, as you get more familiar with this machine and you start realizing, yeah, it's a 12-way blade for a reason, you know, it helps you kind of manipulate the snow into areas you need. Yeah, you'll see, there's lots of hills that we're making cut bank on, so to speak, so there's just these big drifts or the hillside like this, and we're cutting straight into the side of it, trying to cut a nice level trail, and that 12-way blade is a big help in that situation.
Jeremiah mentioned leveling out trails. I don't own a snowmobile. I've seen cross-country skiing, and I tend to bag peaks in snowshoes. So who benefits from his snow grooming artistry?
No, it's mostly just snowmobilers, and you know, the quality comes out good enough for skiing. We try to do our best to make things as level as possible and
filling all the deficits. And because you imagine a snowmobiler coming down here at 23 miles an hour, and you hit a little bump that you left, you know, a little speed bump, so to speak, of snow, and that's pretty uncomfortable to sled. And if you're going even faster, which some people do, you can get, you know, bucked off your sled. So, you know, it's a safety issue, just, and it's also an aesthetic thing. It's, you know, try to make the trail as nice and smooth as possible. It's challenging, you know, it's, especially with the different temperatures. We're not up high like ski resorts where we have a lot of different terrain we cover. We go up high and then come down low and then go up high again. So we, just in a single day, even if it is like cold out and freezing temperatures, we'll encounter different types of snow, different densities, and we'll have to adjust, you know, for what we're doing there. That's why, you know, there's all these buttons to adjust your tiller. You got tiller speed, you got tiller depth, which is how far those teeth cut into the snow. You've got up pressure, down pressure, you got float, and then you can adjust your down pressure. All these things are necessary to kind of get that nice corduroy pattern. And some days, you know, when you're just driving out here and you don't have fresh snow, you're just re-grooming a trail that got, you know, kind of tore up from a lot of sled use. You're just trying to put that nice corduroy pattern back. Sometimes you have to really get that pressure on that tiller down. You have to get those teeth cutting in deep, and you have to go a little slower, so it gives it time to kind of process that snow to where it needs to be, to where you can cover up just your machine's track, you know, so those aren't showing. But, and then some days you fail, you know, you can't get it perfect, but you just gotta move on, you know, you can't spend all day out here.
Corduroy, a fashion in the 70s for sure, but does the youth totally understand that term? Sorry, I digress. I ask Jeremiah what a recreation technician does during each season.
Well, for the wintertime, it's the grooming operations, and we also do sled patrols. You know, I'm an FPO, so we go out there and we check compliance with green stickers, and then we check for resource damage, which is part of the grant agreement, the ground operations, and we also maintain the facilities out here, the bathrooms and the grooming or the warming hut. And then in the summertime or springtime and fall, we manage campgrounds. We do just about everything you could imagine to keep those things operational, and opening and closing them. I'm the head guy for like the big maintenance projects, and I'm also the water operator for the water systems, because they're public water systems, and we have one especially that needs special attention. It has a chlorinator, and that requires a D1 level distribution operator, which I have that license to do that. Yeah, what I do is I manage, repair, and do all the reporting on those public water systems. That's, you know, following EPA standards and guidelines, you know, for, and all the policy that falls under, you know, it depends on how big your water system is, but we have the smaller ones. They qualify as a transient non-community, so we have to test it when it's open. It's a seasonal system, and that also changes how, you know, it's regulated. But these are the spigots you see at the campgrounds. Yeah, and we do have one campground that it's an actual old hand pump well.
Jeremiah added that the water tests are done at several spots, pipes, well. If all goes then the county approves the campground can open. The water is then tested once a month. Did you catch that acronym, FPO?
An FPO is a forest protection officer. So it's like, I think they consider it a level 2 law enforcement. We can enforce federal regulation, codes of federal regulation for the Forest Service.
Well, we'll get back to more on what a recreation technician does, or at least what Jeremiah does, just in case we have folks listening and just heard their ideal job. Now, the Pilgrim Creek Snowmobile Park is considered an OHV, or off-highway vehicle area.
It's mostly just on our district. It's just through the snowmobile clubs. And this actual program of grooming was started in the 60s by volunteers who were avid snowmobilers, and they had their own clubs, and they basically wrote up grants, sent it to the state. State, that's how it got started. And then it got to the point where the Forest Service, because we're putting these machines and these parking lots and parks on Forest Service land, so it just happened in partnership that way, where we're managing that, and recreation, OHV, it just kind of goes hand in hand.
Jeremiah and his staff conduct community outreach, trying to entice a continuing flow of volunteers to help maintain these OHV trails. For the most part, the public follows the rules, but problems do exist.
I think the biggest thing we run into, and it's hard to manage, but it's just trespassing, because there's a lot of checkerboard between Forest Service land and private land. You're going in and out, and that's why we provide for free to the public these the maps of the trail system where they can sled, but it's like, you know, be mindful of these areas that are private, because you can get stuck in a snowmobile, and the most common damage you will do to resources is you have to cut a tree out of your way, like a little, like the top of a tree. You're on, say you're on 8-10 feet of snow, but then you accidentally plow into a tree well or something, and it's easy, you can't get the sled unstuck unless you cut part of the tree away, and that's the biggest resource damage we've seen out here.
Not to say I'd stick to trails either, but the park is built, made, created, what have you, for this reason. There are maps with designated areas, and part of that reasoning is safety.
We have wilderness intrusion, so there's Mount Shasta Wilderness area. There's a lot of places, just a few in particular, that people like to go and sneak into with their snowmobiles, and that's a no-no, so we go check on that, make sure signs are posted, and document that stuff. That's part of our agreement with the state. We give them that data so they can see what's actually occurring out here with their trail system. Yeah, so there's a few play areas, and we have them marked on our map. They're big flat areas that get a lot of snow, and they're just wide open where people can open up the throttles and play around. But yeah, and then a lot of guys, there's a couple of hills that they like to go out and play on and do some hill climbing and test their abilities, I guess. Yeah, you get off trail right now, especially where we're at in elevation, there's not a whole lot of snow, and you can easily damage your sled by, you know, catching a rock or a stump, or there's options, but most people are taking this trail system to get up further into more snow, you know, into deeper snow conditions, because then that way everything's covered up, you know, so to speak, you know, all the stumps and the little things that can cause issues, and then when you're sitting on 6 feet or more of snow, there's kind of a more comfort there to play around than it is on right here where we've only got 1 to 2 feet. Did it in one shot. If I was grooming right now, we could pop out about an hour from the park, right there, just kind of west of Elk Flat. But we'll, since this is a fresh groom after a couple storms, we're gonna have to track back it, and then we'll turn around and groom it.
As we approach Trout Creek Campground, I wanted to know more on what snow conditions create what decision. A to groom or not to groom moment.
There's a few catalysts. There's one, we don't really want to go out during the storm because our work's just going to be covered up by more snow, and it's dangerous. We can get caught in the system, and wind's a big safety issue. You know, a lot of these trees will come down in the trail just from wind and, you know, heavy snow. So we kind of like to go after the storm has passed, and then we take that new fresh snow, and we try not to go out on the weekends because it's, you know, busy with snowmobilers, and we don't want to, you know, cause any kind of, we don't want to be on the trail with them, because what we're doing is we want to groom the trail, and we're processing the snow, and then once it's groomed, it needs time to set up, which freezes, and if snowmobilers go right through that when it's setting up and rip it, it'll set up with snowmobile tracks in it, and it'll be hard to groom, and it'll just be uncomfortable to ride on. So, and then it's also a safety issue with these guys will be coming around a corner, and they'll see us, and they'll panic and run off the road, or so to speak. And it's just better to groom during the week when there's less traffic. So, you know, after a big snowstorm that's, you know, put a lot of powder and you know, drier snow, less dense snow, we'll wait, you know, even a few days after the storm has passed to just hopefully let that snow kind of condense a little bit more, because we've been out here with this machine and we've had trouble just driving around.
you know, just because the powder is just so, it's dry and, you know, it doesn't compact very well because it's, you know, really cold and it's difficult just to, you know, with just the tracks to get around, let alone having to do blade work and drag that tiller back there, which weighs about 1,500 pounds. So it's essentially an anchor. And what we're dragging around with this machine, which, you know, probably roughly weighs anywhere from 16,000 pounds without the blade.
Do you want more lingo? Priority. Jeremiah tells us more.
Yeah, we're on what we call the Trout Creek Loop. It's part of our trail system, and this is actually what we call like priority number three. Our first priority and second priority is the Pomeroy route, which is that's what it's called on the map, and it's the 19 road, or known as Military Fast Road, and that's basically the road that you get on from Pilgrim Creek Park and it goes straight out to Deer Mountain Park, and then you turn around and then come back and groom that. And then our second priority is Ash Creek Loop, which is you know, shoots off the 19 and goes around Ash Creek Peak. And the reason we have that on our trail system is it's got a lot of good hill climbing areas, and a lot of people like to go into the bowl of Ash Creek Butte and play with their snowmobiles and do high marking, and there's good powder up there. But then that little loop cuts back onto the 19 at Jackrabbit Flat, which is a good like flat play area that a lot of people like to, you know, practice carving and, or just sit and have lunch. It's got, when on a clear day, it's got great views of the east side of Mount Shasta.
I guess forest focus wasn't good enough for priority one or two. But then I heard more bad news.
This loop right here, you know, if we did it in one loop, it would be probably 4 to 5 hours. But today it's going to take probably close to 7, just because we're going to track pack it. And then once we tie into the other loop, the Ash Creek loop, we'll turn around there and then come back and actually put the groomer down and groom when we track back. So we're kind of doing it twice, so to speak.
7 hours. My silence was deafening. But Jeremiah is an artist, and perfection can't be rushed. Plus, remember, I did mention hip-deep snow.
Which is necessary a lot of the times to get a nice, consistent groom trail. It's better to track pack fresh snow and give it 20, 30 minutes if you can, like at the minimum, and then it's even better to leave it for a couple hours or overnight and then come back and plow it out and level it out and groom it. But, you know, what we're doing today is good. It's perfect timing. You know, it's just track back it. It'll sit here for a couple hours before we come back over it again, and it'll groom nicely.
For the fashionistas out there, I was more concerned about, will we see corduroy today?
Yeah, but it's also what we're doing when we're grooming the snow is, you know, they call it processing the snow, is we're basically warming it up, and we're taking, you know, not to get too in-depth on the science of it, but you're taking and you're kind of cutting up the snow flakes, you know, you're kind of rounding off the edges on those spiky flakes, and it allows it to melt, so to speak, a little bit, you know, and it kind of allows it to condense and become a more consistent and dense trail, as opposed to leaving air pockets and, you know, having it melt in some places and not others. So track packing fresh snow causes that to happen first, and then you go over it again with the tiller, and that does it again and causes, you know, more consistency on the trail.
We were now track packing with dirt road far below and headed into private land where the landscape was scarred by the 2021 Antelope fire. As we float on top of the snow, not plowing through it, we travel through a timber harvest area and realize how far we are into the backcountry. Colored markings on certain trees are the only color we see. It is stunning. And you realize we are working. This is something that Jeremiah has done hundreds of times.
It's a job for me, and it used to be, you know, it was a new experience at one point, and, you know, this is mo-
most things I do with the Forest Service have always been fun to learn and do. And then, yeah, you do it long enough, and you're kind of like, okay, I've kind of mastered that craft, and I'm not stimulated anymore. Like anything else you get familiar with. But it's still, you know, I tell myself it's nice to get paid to be out here and do this stuff. When I'm not doing this in the wintertime, you know, if I have another partner I can go out with, I'm getting paid to snowmobile, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And some guys, you know, they're out doing snow surveys and stuff. They're getting paid to ski, you know. They got to ski into these places and then ski out. No, this is great, dude. Sometimes you're out here and you don't see people for days.
Not to paint a romantic picture, recreation technicians also have the stressful job of getting those popular campgrounds ready for the public. Depending on the location, a massive amount of people itching to get to their favorite spots and recreate. What follows is a constant drumbeat of follow the posted signs, the camp hosts and patrolling recreation technicians reminding folks of current fire restrictions, pointing out obvious signs of wildfire dangers, dealing with trash and misuse of facilities. Oh, by the way, this soapbox moment was brought to you by Leave No Trace Principles and to pack your trash out. Now, back to a grooming problem. We are outsloped. Yep, more lingo.
I'm outsloped.
Okay.
So I don't want that, because when you're on a sled, that's going to want to push you downhill. So I could fix this coming back too, but I'm going to do it right now. Just because I was already kind of talking about it. So what I need is take more snow from the right, put the blade, push it, and let it come over to this side. And I can feel that in my seat when I'm driving. Now, see, like, I can't see it in the trail, but I can feel it in my machine if I'm getting too listed out to the left or right. It's just, and that's not, you know, that doesn't come naturally. That's fly by your, you know, the edge of your seat or whatever. It's something you kind of learn with experience. But
all I see is snow, snow, and more snow. I can't make out hills, peaks, the sun. And 14,000-foot Mount Shasta never made an appearance all day. No clue where the road is. Does he get lost?
But yeah, this is the trail system I've gotten lost on many times. As you can tell, it's like where, if you don't know where the road is, it looks like it'd be anywhere between some trees, right?
Right.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite trail loop, whatever you want to call it, to groom. Just because it's a little different country, and it's usually a little more technical and tighter. Like, you gotta move a lot more snow after, you know, snow systems or storm systems. And then there's some really cool views of Mount Shasta when it's clear skies.
Oh, yeah.
Which, unfortunately, I don't know if you'll see the views I'm speaking of today. But I don't know what's prettier, like this condition or these kind of conditions, or like, I think clear days, you know, obviously you can see more, but
yeah,
this is kind of nice once in a while too, like something different, kind of mist, you know, the fog, mountain, like.
If these piston bullies break down, the parts facility is located in Reno, Nevada. They also can send out mechanics if necessary.
Yeah, we have breakdowns, which we do, and if we can deal with it in-house, which we have a lot, we save them a lot of money, you know, doing it ourselves. If they're comfortable, it's the state's equipment, so we always ask them first. And then they have an account, and they just say, yeah, just call up the parts person and have them ship it to you. You know, if you want it overnight, we'll pay for that too.
With big snow years, hundreds of miles of trails, how many people are trained to snow groom? And what's the ideal situation to maintain this program?
But yeah, it'd be nice, you know, in theory, to have, you know, four or five operators that, you know, do this regularly, but we don't have the staff, and then, so we relied heavily in the past on volunteers, and those volunteers have, you know, like you say, got older and passed away, or just, you know, aren't in the shape and ability to do this, but this machine would get a lot of use, you know. In theory, you could, like, have a night crew, and then fuel up, and in the morning the day crew can come on and get the rest pushed out real quickly, and then that way it leaves you time to go out and patrol and snowmobile or play around if you're a volunteer. Yeah, that's what the volunteers are doing. They want to see a groom so they can go play on it.
We are in some amazing terrain right now. While not banking like a fighter jet, we are cutting through trees and hitting some slopes, which brought up the avalanche topic.
And we do actually have a couple avalanche awareness areas on our map that our trail, our group trail system goes through. But it's not typically, you know, the avalanche wouldn't typically threaten the trail system and riding on the trail. It's just if you get off the trail and start playing in, they call boondocking into the trees and stuff, that you are in that, you know, known avalanche prone area. So don't think we're gonna be on any today.
Wait, what was that? So you've heard if a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a sound? What's the point of all this grooming if the public doesn't know about it?
Yeah, we have a portal that we enter, you know, any kind of information of what trails we groom, what conditions are like out there, and especially like at what conditions are like at the park. It's a good spot to put in, like, you know, for instance, you know, they're plowing out like about a mile and a half from Deer Mountain. They have a logging operation, and then they cut to the left. But so you got about a mile and a half where you don't have a trail groomed, and then once you get past that, then you're good to go. Yeah, so we try to update that before you go home every night. I don't know how often that gets used and how people actually look at it, but it's also on the avalanche.org or ShastaAvalanche.org site that you know, Nick Myers and his crew maintain that avalanche awareness site. So there's a little drop-down menu for trails and stuff. You can find that report on there too. Yeah, and I put that even on the report on the website. Like, I'll go home at the end of the day and I'm like, all I could get done was track packing, you know, this trail. But at least they know that, and they can plan, like, if they want to even go out this area. But, you know, a lot of people, I think, just drive out to the park and just go for it, and then just, they can, you know, visually determine what's been, you know, proven or not. But, and then sometimes they don't care, they're just going out to their specific spot. They, you know, always go to, and whether they're going to have to go through ungroomed systems or not. I think I just saved when I'm not on the trail.
Dang it! I must have jinxed it.
See, it gets, we're on like 10 plus feet of snow right now, so it's easy to get lost up here. Especially in these more thinned out areas. So this is private, as you can tell. It's not as dense as the Forest Service. I zigged when I should have zagged.
Part of the reason I was disoriented was from, wait for it, here is more lingo, flat light.
Yeah, the light's flat, like, yeah, there's not enough contrast to show you the terrain.
Now, let's go back a bit to making sure the public have the means to recreate on their public lands. We wouldn't be a federal agency without some complaints. We certainly can't please everybody all the time, but for Jeremiah and the staff at the Shasta Trinity National Forest, it seems all about earning trust and developing understanding.
But yeah, for the most part, people know that, you know, we can't get out here and do everything. Like, you know, there's, you gotta work in between storm systems, and we have mechanical failures, breakdowns that we gotta deal with. And most districts have, you know, somebody staffed at the front desk for that information. Like, you know, if it gets confusing, you just call, you know, from 8 to 4:30, you know, somebody's usually there, and it's like, and they either know it or they'll go find out the answer, you know, like, well, the web, you know, and some people, which is not bad, it sounds redundant, but it's like, they'll go on the website and they're like, okay, the website says this, but is that true? And it's good to do that once in a while, especially if you're thinking, man, that doesn't make sense, like, is this road really open right now? And then you can, you know, talk to that person, they'll be like, oh, actually, no. You know, there are times where we forgot to update that, or it didn't go through. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've updated the grooming report, and then I'll go back and check it, and I'll be like, oh, it didn't take, you know, like, it just didn't get processed through the portal, or I don't know. Like, you know, technology's not perfect. So it's good to hear that voice from, you know, an actual real person saying, yes, it is this way, or yes, that's open, or no, it's closed. Yeah, I think our district does a really good job, especially in recreation, reporting all the info you need to know before you go.
As a person who enjoys climbing peaks in all seasons, I can attest to knowing before you go is crucial, but at times frustrating. While our websites might not be a complete one-stop shop, going into the unknown requires a lot of research and knowing who has firsthand knowledge of the recreational area that you're going into. Trip reports from previous climbers, volunteer groups, snowmobile clubs, county tourism boards, calling a business, and state officials. They all could help dial in your plan A with a B, a C, or even a plan D as backup. And speaking of having a backup plan, we're stopped.
Well, it's just the yellow one, which is good. I mean, if it was red, red, it'd be serious, but it's like, yellow's like kind of like figure it out, like we'll get home, but red's like stop and fix it right now. But
it's not a skull, as long as it's not a skull,
yeah,
right?
It's, no, not yet. Yeah, it's something with the engine.
We're good.
The engine must have heard us talking about parts and it being a little old.
Yeah, so now that we've track packed it, we're going back over it and we're moving a little bit more snow, trying to get it smooth as possible. And then behind us, we got the tiller going, which is processing the snow even further. And then what it's doing is it's chewing it up and it's putting a little pressure on top of that snow, and the curtain behind it's dragging, which is giving it that corduroy pattern.
Having track packed what trails were needed, we start heading back. As trails get heavy traffic, Jeremiah and the staff will return for a fresh makeover. But there has to be some time for fun and games, right? What about building a fortress, an igloo, a giant snow creature?
No, but I have thought about just putting a random, like, jump-off ramp for snowmobiles, like, just on some random, end of the trail or something.
Grooming trails for 7 to 8 hours without a soul in sight? What about wildlife?
It's rare. I mean, they're out here, but yeah, I've seen tracks more than wildlife. Mountain lion, bear tracks. One time I thought I saw wolf tracks, but then, believe it or not, 10 miles from the snowmobile park where these people had parked, they were out jogging on the trail with their big old dog. It was one of those Great Pyrenees. So that's what I was seeing. I've seen pine marten, coyotes, you know, but for the most part, you know, this machine's pretty loud and everything hears it coming, so it just avoids it. It's red too, so it's a big shiny loud red thing. Most animals don't hang out to check it out.
Just to cover a question we know we might get in the future, no, we didn't see any Lumerians or lizard people. I was on the lookout though. One thing I did find that was utterly enjoyable and entertaining was the movement and formation of the snow built up on the blade. It was mesmerizing. As we returned to the shed, also known as the home of the Piston Bully, I learned more about Jeremiah's other assigned duties, which might appeal to you. He climbs trees to trim and minimize hazardous branches. He also climbs trees to collect cones for replanting and reforestation purposes. He does patrolling of camp areas and disperse campgrounds to enforce fire restrictions. Here is another assigned duty that's actually pretty cool.
Another thing we do in recreation that's kind of fun is we have a couple old historic lookouts that we rent out to the public, and we have to maintain those, so we get to drive out to these places and work on them. One year we had a big project on, you know, it was a 23 tread stair case that we replaced. Just took the old one out and totally rebuilt the new one, and I've rebuilt shutters on one of our lookouts, and you know, then we repaint them. They're old and falling apart, and we're just keeping them safe for the public to keep using, so there's always something there. But
after grooming 55 miles and seeing one set of snowmobile tracks, I asked Jeremiah how he ended up as a recreation technician on the McLeod Ranger District.
By chance. I mean, I didn't necessarily pick this career. I was in college at 20, and it seemed like a good seasonal job. And, you know, kind of fell in love with working out in the woods. And you get to meet all kinds of people and
A lot of good friendships and things have happened over the years from just working here. And it's also great to serve your community. I mean, you get paid to be a public servant. It's one of my favorite things about the job. But recreation is always what I've worked in for about 20 years now. I think I've stayed in it because it's just pretty diverse, especially in our area, on our district. We have a lot of different things we do, you know, on any given day. So it's not monotonous. It's very it's very fun. It can be challenging, and that's part of the fun. But if you're up for it and you like those challenges, I mean, it's a good place to work.
I think I have what it takes to be a snow groomer. So I get to sit in the admiral's chair. Jeremiah goes over the controls. If you went snowmobiling in that area and noticed one small area wasn't perfectly groomed with that corduroy effect, yeah, that was me. Thanks to Jeremiah and the wonderful recreation staff at the Shasta Trinity National Forest for letting us tag along. You truly make enjoying the outdoors in all seasons more accessible. Thanks for listening. For those who are curious to learn more, go over to the show description page and click on the links. To find more episodes, search for Forest Focus Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, email us at sm.fs.r5ffpodcast@usda.gov. Until next time, enjoy your public lands. Please remember to recreate responsibly, know before you go, and learn what you can do to prevent wildfires. Take care. This podcast is sponsored by the USDA Department of Agriculture, Forest Service, and the USDA is an equal opportunity provider, employer, and lender.